142, please. Looking at David this evening, the man after God's own heart. And I want to say that that phrase And remember that phrase was spoken by God himself. God called David the man after his own heart. And that has been criticized right down through the years, and so many of the critics come along at times and say, now how can he be called the man after God's own heart when he committed these terrible sins against Bathsheba and against her husband? Well, we'll get round to see exactly how that's answered this evening. Next week in the Bible class, let me say this, we're going to look at Enoch. And I want to say now that the whole biography of Enoch given by the Spirit in the book, it just covers 9 verses in the Bible. A few in Genesis and a few in Hebrews and a few just at the end of the New Testament. I want you to get the hold of that, because when you compare the Spirit-given biography of Enoch with the Spirit-given biography of David, what a comparison. You see, there are 62 chapters in the Old Testament given to the biography of David. I think I told you the other night there were 14 chapters given to Abraham. And yet, you see, Abraham is mentioned more times in the New Testament than David was. But the skill of the Spirit is so infinite that he can take more or take less and paint the picture of the scholar in the school. And so we're looking at David tonight, and we have plenty of material. There are 62 chapters for us to take the cream from. And looking at David tonight, we know that he was the shepherd boy, and he was only 16 years of age. He was the shepherd boy that was taken from the plains around Bethlehem yonder and taken by God to the palace to be the king of this great and mighty nation. And you can see I've outlined for you on the notes the many phases that he passed through. He was a shepherd boy for some time, and then we are going to find out tonight that he was a very cunning and very capable and very skilled musician, one of the great harpists of the Old Testament. Of course, we do know that he was the sweet singer of Israel. And I think you know this, that once upon a time he faced this great giant Goliath, and he became the champion of the nation of Israel on that occasion. We know he was a poet, and I think there would be no arguments when I say that the 23rd Psalm, written by the hand of David, it's still at the top of the charts tonight, no matter what way you look at it. And remember, at this moment, it is 2,600 years old. And some of the songs we're listening to today won't stand that test. He was not only a shepherd boy and a musician and singer and champion and poet, great writer and warrior. Indeed, it's said that he was a warrior from his youth up. He was also an outlaw, and there should be a comma at the back of outlaw. She has failed again and left out the comma. Yes. Yes. In fact, there's a very beautiful book written about David as the Robin Hood of the Old Testament. And he did rob the rich, you know, to feed the poor. And he was an outlaw in those days. And then at last he came to be the king. And not only the king, but the great king. That's actually the title given to him. Great King of Israel. So you can see we have plenty of scope this evening. I want to look first of all at David's election by God. I think you remember this, don't you? That God brought Israel out of Egypt, brought them through the wilderness, and eventually into the promised land under Joshua. And after Joshua's death, the judges of Israel became the rulers of the nation. And then you will find that when old Samuel the prophet was judging Israel, that Israel cried to Samuel, first of all, that they wanted to have a king over them like the nations around them. And the Lord gave into this, yes, allowed them. It was the permissive will of God. And God permitted them to have a king. And their first king was Saul, King Saul. You remember he was a Benjamite. And you remember when God gave him a task to do, to wipe out the Amalekites. Then he disobeyed God and saved Agag, who was the king of the Amalekites. Now that's where we want to start the story this evening of David. And we're at 1 Samuel, and we're at chapter 15, please. First book of Samuel, and we're at chapter 15. And when Saul had failed and disobeyed God, then Samuel the prophet came to talk to him. And we're at 1 Samuel 15, verse 24. And Saul said unto Samuel, I have sinned. He's admitting to the prophet that he failed. I've sinned, for I have transgressed the commandment of the Lord and thy words, because I feared the people and obeyed their voice. And there are so many people who disobey God just because they fear the people. And that's a terrible thing, when the fear of man bringeth that sort of snare upon you. Verse 25, now therefore I pray thee, pardon my sin, and turn again with me, that I may worship the Lord. And Samuel said unto Saul, I will not return with thee, for thou hast rejected the word of the Lord, and the Lord hath rejected thee from being king over Israel. And as Samuel turned about to go away, he laid hold upon the skirt of his mantle, and it rent. And Samuel said unto him, the Lord hath rent the kingdom of Israel from thee this day, and hath given it to a neighbor of thine that is better than thou. Now I want you to gather one or two things quickly here. You know, Saul at that moment was being rejected by God as the king of Israel. And he certainly didn't know who the neighbor was that was going to get the throne in his place. And I'll tell you once more that although Samuel is coming out and talking so loudly and so clearly, he didn't know either. God was talking in his innermost breast, and he knew there was somebody nearby who was going to get the kingdom, but he didn't know
Let's get the whole. And what is more important for us, David was the neighbor, and he was 16 years of age, and he was on the hills around Bethlehem attending a few sheep, and he didn't know either. It never even dawned on the wee fella, if you'll allow me to say that. Oh, but God knew, long before the wee fella knew. And God had now settled it. God was electing David. Now we're commencing in 1 Samuel 16. I want you to get this. Verse 1, and the Lord said unto Samuel, how long wilt thou mourn for Saul, seeing I have rejected him from reigning over Israel? Fill thine horn with oil and go. I will send thee to Jesse the Bethlehemite, for I have provided me a king among his sons. You see, God knew where the king was. And although the little fella is just young, and he's 16, and he's on the mountains, and he's tending a few sheep, and we'll underline that in a moment. You know, this election works, doesn't it? God had him picked out. God had chosen him. David doesn't know, and we're going to find out that Samuel didn't know, and most certainly Saul didn't know, but God knew. And you know, God may have his eye on one or two of you in this place, and you don't need to worry about the future too much, you know. Leave the unknown future in the Master's hands. He knows. I don't know about tomorrow, but I do know who holds tomorrow in his hand. Samuel was a little bit afraid here, although he was the great prophet. Verse 2, and Samuel said, how can I go? If Saul hear it, he will kill me. And the Lord said, take an heifer with thee, and say, I am come to sacrifice to the Lord. And call Jesse to the sacrifice, and I will show thee what thou shalt do. And thou shalt anoint unto me him whom I name. Did you get that little bit? Yes, him whom I name. Not him whom the Baptist Union names, or anything like that. Or anybody else, or any other crowd, or college, or anything. Unless God sends you, you must go home. Remember that. And for any sake, you young fellows, don't be using red tape. This Masonic business doesn't work in God's domain. Just leave the thing with God. He says, I'll name him. Samuel didn't need to scratch his head, you know. He says, I'll tell you. You're the prophet, but I'll tell you. And when I tell you, you'll know. And so, you see, verse 4 says, and Samuel did that which the Lord spake. It's a good idea. And came to Bethlehem. And the elders of the town trembled at his coming, and said, comest thou peaceably? And he said, peaceably. I am come to sacrifice unto the Lord. Sanctify yourselves, and come with me to the sacrifice. And he sanctified Jesse and his sons, and called them to the sacrifice. And it came to pass, when they were come, that he looked on Eliab, and said, surely the Lord's anointed is before him. Oh, this was the firstborn, you see. Had a look at him, strapping big fella, broad shoulders, and all the rest of it. And the old prophet, you know, just was going to be taken in here. But the Lord said unto Samuel, verse 7, look not on his countenance, or on the height of his stature, because I have refused him. For the Lord seeth not as man seeth, for man looketh on the outward appearance, but the Lord looketh on the heart. Yes, he was rejected too. Then Jesse called Abinadab, that's the next son, and made him pass before Samuel. And they said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. And Jesse made Shammah to pass by, and he said, neither hath the Lord chosen this. Again Jesse made 7 of his sons to pass before Samuel. And Samuel said unto Jesse, the Lord hath not chosen these. And Samuel said unto Jesse, are here all thy children? And he said, there remaineth yet the youngest, and behold, he keepeth the sheep. And Samuel said unto Jesse, send and fetch him, for we will not sit down till he come hither. And he sent and brought him in. This is David's picture for you. Now he was ruddy, and withal of a beautiful countenance, and goodly to look to. And the Lord said, just as quick as lightning, arise, anoint him. This is he. We're settled now. This was the new king. He's only 16 at this moment. In fact, the family thought so little of him, they didn't think it was worthwhile bringing him in to see the prophet at all. But we'll get around to that in a moment. All the other big fellows were there, but he wasn't there, and he wasn't called, and Jesse didn't think it fit to call him. And I want you to get the hold of this, that he was away out in the mountains there, and he was learning a whole lot of little things. Now I want to sort of paint for you David's situation at home next. Now let's go to the book of Ruth. It just comes before 1 Samuel, Joshua, Judges, and then comes Ruth. And I think that every lady in the meeting knows the story of Ruth. She was a Moabitess, and you remember that she had married Naomi's son and he had died, and she was a young widow. And now her mother-in-law, Naomi, is going back to God, getting back into fellowship with God. And Ruth wants to go with her. You remember the decision that Ruth made. Looked into the eyes of her mother-in-law. She stood on the borderline between the two countries. And she said these words, entreat me not to leave thee, nor to return from following after thee. For whither thou goest, I will go. And thy people shall be my people, and thy God shall be my God. That's what made her decision everything. She was changing her God. She had worshipped at an idol down in Moab for ever so long. But she was turning to God from idols now. Turning to the living God. And so she came into the land, and she met a man in the land called Boaz, and he married her. And we're at the last chapter of Ruth just now, chapter 4. Trying to save time as we go along. So Boaz, verse 13, so Boaz took Ruth, and she was his wife, and when he went in unto her, the Lord gave her conception, and she bare a son. And Naomi, verse 16, took the child, that's Ruth's former mother-in-law. Naomi took the child and laid it in her bosom and became nurse unto it. And the woman, her neighbors, gave it a name, saying, there is a son born to Naomi, and they called his name Obed. He is the father of Jesse, and Jesse was the father of David. So you can see the last verse, verse 22, Obed begot Jesse, and Jesse begot David. So that you can see that Ruth was Obed's mother, and she was Jesse's grandmother, and she was, and Obed begot Jesse. He was the grandson of Ruth, and of course David was the great grandson. That's what I'm getting round to. So you see where he came from. Now there's something that I want you to see way back in the very first chapter of Ruth. When Naomi is talking, she's getting back to God and going back to where God is worshipped. In verse 21 she said, I went out full, and the Lord hath brought me home again empty. I want you to see that this woman not only lost her sons by getting away from God, but she lost all her possessions. Now that tells me that when she came back she had very little of an inheritance to come to. Now it's quite true that Boaz was a rich man, and it's quite true that he married Ruth, but it's equally true that when we see Jesse's home, let's go to 1 Samuel 17 for a moment, first book of Samuel, chapter 17, and we'll come to this because this is the place where Goliath appears and David is asking questions, and his elder brother heard him when he spake. See verse 28, 1 Samuel 17, and Eliab, his eldest brother, heard him when he spake unto the men, and Eliab's anger was kindled against David, and he said, why camest thou down hither, and with whom hast thou left those few sheep in the wilderness? I want you to get the whole there, because all those little details are given us by the Spirit of God. Because Jesse had a family of boys here, and the little fella is out on the hills and he's attending just a few sheep, and you can see the household. They set this lad at naught, didn't even bring him when Samuel came, and I'm getting the whole picture painted together. There's just a few sheep on the hills, and I think they're back to poverty again, or pretty near it. So this is the situation. He's despised, looked down upon, and the family hasn't got very much to talk about, just a few sheep on the hills. So this is the situation. Now I want you to think about David out on the hills, and that brings us to David's preparation for life. You know, when this giant appeared, David, who had come down to see his brothers in the battle and at the army camp, David said to Saul in verse 32, 1 Samuel 17, verse 32. And can't you see this young fellow coming to this great king? And David said to Saul, let no man's heart fail because of him, that is because of Goliath. Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine. Saul said to David, thou art not able to go against this Philistine to fight with him, for thou art but a youth, and he a man of war from his youth. And David said unto Saul, thy servant kept his father's sheep, and there came a lion and a bear, and took a lamb out of the flock, and I went out after him, and smote him, and delivered it out of his mouth. And when he arose against me, I caught him by his beard and slew him, and smote him and slew him. Thy servant slew both the lion and the bear. And this uncircumcised Philistine shall be as one of them, seeing he hath defied the armies of the living God. David said, moreover, the Lord that delivered me out of the paw of the lion and out of the paw of the bear, he will deliver me out of the hand of the Philistine. This little fellow had learned to trust God on the hills. You know, he learned a whole lot of things up there. It was the preparation for life. You see, God was putting him into the school. That's the bit I've got to get around to tonight. Sometimes God puts you into the school, you know. And here he is up on the hills, and he's learning what courage is, where it really comes from. And it comes from faith in the living God. That's where it comes from. You don't breed guts. Oh, he learned to trust God, and neither the lion nor the bear annoyed him. You see, he learned a lot more up there, didn't he? Learned to play the harp. Learned to sing as he sat on the hill. Learned all about the sling and the stone, didn't he? You know what he was doing. He was preparing. He's in school now. You know, I was way up on the mountains of Samaria one morning, Dr. Crawford and I, and I was climbing up the wall of an old ruined temple that's up there, and I spied a shepherd boy. Oh, I think he must have been something just like David. He was beautiful. He was really tanned, almost black, but he was just a lad. He must have been 15 or 16. And he's further down the hill. And I said to the guide, who was an Arab, I said, there's a lad on the hillside there. He says, he's a shepherd boy. And I jumped from the wall down. I said, go down and see this kid. He says, don't go near. He says, he threw stones at you. Of course, when you're a stupid Irish man like me, you go on, you know. Don't turn back. I said, then I'm threw away there. So I went on down the hill slowly and watched him like a hawk. He watched me as I came down. And when I got close to him, he couldn't speak English, of course. And I looked at him and I said, hello, son. Patted him on the shoulder. Then he took the water bottle off and pulled the cork out and gave me this water bottle. And the old Arab said, I've never seen it done before. You're in with him. I said, sure, I could get in with anybody. So this kid and I just looked at each other, and I couldn't talk to him. But I had a whole lot of money. I don't mean a whole lot of money. I had a whole lot of Israel money. And you could have your two hands full, and you would have about 9.8 million. And I don't know what was in it. I couldn't take time to count it. But I took it all out, and I gave it to the boy. He was so pleased to get it and put it in his pocket. It wasn't very much, I'm sure it wasn't very much, but I gave it to him anyway. So he began to see I was friendly, and he brought me over, and he gathered a whole lot of stones, and I thought we were going to have to charge the other boys, and Crawford wouldn't have been able to charge back very much, so he wouldn't. And he was wanting to show me what he could do with these. And what an exhibition I got, and it was well worth my while going down. There were great big slippy stones, and he could hinge them, that's the word, just from low down here he could hinge them. And while he had talked to me and I had fiddled about with him, the sheep had got away across the plain. And he could hinge the stone, and you could hear it going through the air. Right across to the very front sheep, and then it would just drop at its nose and it would stop. Then he'd bump another one, and he would turn them. And when they were coming this way, he would bump one over here and turn them in. And what this lad was doing, he was bringing all the sheep up to let me see them. And with a lot of these stones, he brings this whole flock in. just a stone over there and one over there. He brought the whole flock right on up around my feet. He wanted me to see them. And I came to the conclusion, this is what David was doing up here. And I assure you, if yon fellow started to throw stones at you, you would be in a bad way. You need a tin hat on or something like that. If he could really handle it. And you see, David must have been doing this with a sling. He wasn't henching them, but could put them in the sling and throw them and let them go. And when we were boys, I used to use a sling. Wasn't very good at it, but I know about it, how you do it and how you roll it round and how you let one end of it go and how it goes through the air. I know all about that. Now, you see, David was up in the hill preparing. Ah, yes, it's never wasted. You know, I look back at my life, and I'm the youngest one of 17, and I remember those, you know. I can remember this as clear as anything, watching all the faces. I was the youngest one, I must have been the cutest one, because I could watch all the boys' faces round the table. And I tell you, you know, my mother used to tumble a big pot of potatoes up on the table. Oh, no fancy tablecloth or anything like that. They just tumbled them up. And I'll tell you this, you didn't have to put your fork in it or anything, you just lifted it. And if you didn't lift it, it was a pity of you. There would be none there in a minute or two. Just lift it. And you know, you should see all the faces. I can see them yet. And see them smiling, and my big brother looked down at me and shake his head. Ah, I get one pretty quick, you know. And there it was. And we got buttermilk and spuds and salt. And I say this before God, I wouldn't like it had changed. I'm glad I was brought up like that. There's a great school to go to. That fitted me for any part of this world, you know. And I'm so pleased. I thank God every day I was poor. Thank God for that. I think that was the greatest blessing I ever had. And I never want to be anything else. Somehow you get brought up like that, it's good for you. And David, you know, was being prepared for life, wasn't he? And in this 1 Samuel 17 and 32, you can see his decision. He's prepared to go to fight. He says, "Thy servant will go and fight with this Philistine." I think you can see this, can't you? He's prepared to stand in the evil day. Now, this is what counts with God, you know. Not just saying hallelujah or amen. Enjoying the thing. It's the day you stand up and you count it. That's what counts. See, all the big fellows, they call this wee fellow names. They despise him. Oh, but here he is now. When the evil day has come, he's standing on his 2 feet and he's looking into the king's face. He says, "I'll go." There's his trust in God, you know. It's when decisions are made, when you can trust the Lord. It's a mighty thing, you know. And I want you to see that. Let's get round to this rejection by Saul. 1 Samuel 18, we're just skipping a verse or two. First book of Samuel, chapter 18. See verse 9. Just because David did so well at the battle and so many people praised him, you know, when God begins to bless you and people begin to thank God for you, you always find there's somebody nearby who doesn't like you. You can be prepared for that, young fella. Yes. See verse 9. "And Saul eyed David from that day and forward." Oh yes. See 19, chapter 19, verse 1. And Saul spake to Jonathan his son, and to all his servants, that they should kill David. It will always be so, you know. You know, I've come up through life, I know a whole lot of things, you know. You learn everywhere. You know, when I got saved, just poor drunkard saved, and I was enjoying the Lord. Just enjoyed the Lord. I remember going down the street in the rain, you know, and saying, Lord, you with me. We're walking down this footpath together. I used to turn around and talk to the Lord and squeeze his hand. And I was enjoying the Lord. Just to stand in the street and tell the people about the Lord. Oh, yes, my sister didn't like it. She thought I'd gone crackers. Yes, and a whole lot of other people didn't like it. But the old Methodist minister, to his credit, yes, Beresford Lyons they called him, an old fellow with a beard, coming up the footpath, he stopped me one day. He says, you've got really saved, son. I says, praise the Lord for that, mister. Are you saved? Yes, I am indeed. I said, long are you saved? Just talk to him like I'd talk to anybody else. No bigotry or any bitterness in it or anything like that. He says, I'll tell you what I want you to do. I want you to come into the big Methodist church there and have a week's meetings. You must be daft. He said, I don't preach or anything. I'm just happy I'm saved. I'll come along some Sunday night if you like, and you take the meeting and I'll tell them how I got saved. I didn't want a mission or anything. I couldn't really believe the old man. Oh, but he meant it. And he so tormented me, if that's the right word, that one day I said, all right. And what a day that was. And when I saw Big Bill outside this big fashionable Methodist church with my name on it, I felt I should take a ticket to Canada. Yeah. But you know, the whole town came. And I'll tell you how I prepared the messages. I was digging roses every day with a spade, starting at 7 o'clock in the morning. And just for Christ's sake, I was punching the clock at 6:50. I was never late in my life for Christ's sake. Once the clock let the boys say, some of you can't get out of your bed, your ma can't get you up. You haven't got your breakfast when you're going to your work. I was up a long time before that and talked to the Lord. And as I dug the roses, I'd say, Lord Jesus, you tell me about this meeting tonight, what I'm to say. And each day, as sure as I'm here, the phrase would come, Christ died for the ungodly. You must be born again. Some phrase, but I'd work it out all day as I dig. And I'd go along and preach, and there'd be a dozen people saved at night. And I was so stupid, you see, so glad I was, that I didn't realize the Lord was in this place in a mighty way. Just was glad to get out of it at night and away back home and alone with the Lord and get out in the morning and talk to the Lord again, all pleased about talking to the Lord, and he'd give me a new message for the next day and so on. It was the Lord. It's him. Oh, but some of the Christians, they have my life. The pastor of the church, I remember in the church, the pastor of the church, said to the elders and deacons, we'll have to keep him back. Don't give him a meeting. Don't let him have his way at all. He's going to take the town over. It'll nearly take your life, you know, if the Lord blessed you. It's a pity of some of these old pastors, you know. Plaster should be the name. Yeah, well, if God's going to bless you, you better make up your mind about it. You see, David had to go into the wilderness. And he lived away in the cave of Adullam for a long time. And I went up into the cave one day and told you about it. Let's have a look at Psalm 142. Book of Psalms. And we're Psalm 142. If you've got a good Bible there, you'll find right at the top of this psalm it says, a prayer of David, when he was in the cave. He's up in the cave. Well, I know where the cave is, and I was in the cave. And if you would lie on your belly and look out of the cave mouth, you would look right across the fields of Bethlehem when he was brought up and all the rest of it. And he must have lay there at times and wondered what was happening. After all, you know, he would remember that he had been anointed. But I tell you this, if the Lord anoints you to be king, neither Saul, nor Goliath, nor lions, nor bears, nor nobody else will keep you back. It's bound to happen. Otherwise, whatever would keep you back will beat God. I don't know anything that will beat God. If God elected him to be king, king he will be. Always get that quite right in your mind. If God gives you his word, then I don't know anything that will beat his word. If God says, I have provided me a king, who's going to upset it? He ought to have known that. But he didn't, you know. Like the rest of us, he doubted God at times. Here he is in the cave. He says, I cried unto the Lord with my voice. With my voice unto the Lord did I make my supplication. I poured out my complaint before him. I showed before him my trouble. When my spirit was overwhelmed within me, then thou knewest my path. You might get there one day, you know. Oh, some of us have been there. When your spirit is overwhelmed within you, and you think it's all lost, and it's all over, and the darkness has deepened, and the lion roars, and the boat's filled with water. Oh, God knows all about it. Then thou knewest my path. In the way wherein I walked have they privily laid a snare for me. I looked on my right hand, he's looking out of the cave mouth now, and beheld, but there was no man that would know me. Refuge failed me. Here's his great cry. No man cared for my soul. It's a lie. Oh, but you talk nonsense at times, even though you are anointed, you know. For to say no man cared for his soul, I'll tell you at that moment that he's lying in the cave and looking out and he's down in the dumps. Away in the king's palace, the king's son loves David with his own soul, Jonathan. Dear, no matter how dark the night gets, or how many folk get up against you, or how lonely you may seem to be, remember the Lord loves you. And he's on the throne, and he won't change. And neither death, nor life, nor angels, nor anything else can change. Ah, yes, you can see this, David's rejection. David's desertion of soul. You know, it would take a night at this, wouldn't it? You need to take the Psalms, and you need to go through this whole book of Psalms, and there are 150 Psalms. And you know, as I go through the Psalms, I can see that some of the Psalms, well, they're all praise. Oh, how he climbs into the heights by faith, and he touches the top notes on the keyboard of praise. Oh, how he praises the Lord. Yes, they're all praise. And in the prayer meetings here, we're going through the Psalms. And we're not touching the praises. We're just taking out the prayers. He prayed, you know. And oh, how he could pray. How this fellow could really pray. You know, we have been moved in the prayer meetings by the prayers of David and those wonderful phrases. Because, you know, there are messianic psalms in this wonderful book of Psalms. He was a prophet, you know. You see, he graduated in the school and God made him a prophet. And being a prophet, he could foresee. He could see Christ. In fact, in Psalm 22, he saw the cross. He saw the hands and the feet pierced. In fact, he heard the cry of the cross. Psalm 22 begins with, my God, why hast thou forsaken me? You see David's emotional soul, don't you? Do you see David's reflection of God? You see, it was God that said, he's a man after mine own heart. Now there are arguments about this. Let's go back to 1 Samuel 26. We need to read a verse or two to get this properly. And the Ziphites came unto Saul to Gibeah, saying, doth not David hide himself in the hill of Hakilah, which is before Jeshimon? And Saul arose and went down to the wilderness of Ziph, having 3,000 chosen men of Israel with him. And mark the figure, 3,000 chosen men, all warriors, to seek David in the wilderness of Ziph. And Saul pitched in the hill of Hakilah, which is before Jeshimon, by the way, but David abode in the wilderness. And he saw that Saul came after him into the wilderness. David therefore sent out spies and understood that Saul was coming very deep. And David arose and came to the place where Saul had pitched. And David beheld the place where Saul lay. And out there the son of Ner, the captain of Saul's host, and Saul lay in the trench, and the people pitched round about him. Then answered David and said unto Ahimelech the Hittite, and to Abishai the son of Zeruiah, brother to Joab, saying, who will go down with me to Saul to the camp? Can't you see the warrior he was? And Abishai said, I will go down with thee. And David and Abishai came to the people by night. And behold, Saul lay sleeping within the trench, and a spear stuck in the ground at his bolster. But Abner and the people lay round about him. Then said Abishai to David, God hath delivered thine enemy into thine hand this day. Now therefore let me smite him, I pray thee, with the spear even to the ground at once, and I will not smite him the second time. David said to Abishai, destroy him not, for who can stretch forth his hand against the Lord's anointed and be guiltless? David said, furthermore, as the Lord liveth, the Lord shall smite him, or his day shall come to die, or he shall descend into battle and perish. The Lord forbid that I should stretch forth mine hand against the Lord's anointed. But I pray thee, take now the spear that is at his bolster and the cruse of water, and let us go. And that's why he was the man after God's own heart. You see, you'll find that although he was fearless and courageous and a mighty warrior, yet all the time there was mercy and forgiveness flooding his soul. And you're only like God when you're like that. And if you get that old bitterness into you that you cannot forgive or you cannot get on with somebody, it's a pity of you, for you're not like the Lord at all. Oh yes, from that angle and in that sense, he was after God's own heart. Let's go to 1 Samuel 27. First book of Samuel, and we're at chapter 27. And you know, he got down in the dumps here. Verse 1, and David said in his heart, I shall now perish one day by the hand of Saul. There wasn't a chance of it. Oh, I wonder what he was thinking about at all. Did he forget about the anointing? Did he forget that God had sent Samuel to anoint him to be king? We forget the promises of God at times. Sometimes we search for God's word. We get it, we hear it, we hide it in our hearts. Yes, that's what David did. And then there comes a dark night and the storm is howling and we forget. That's where he was. Heart overwhelmed. And he's forgetting the word of the Lord. And so he runs here. And he runs away down into the land of the Philistines. And he runs down there to hide. And the old king of the Philistines took pity on him. Took pity on David, yes. Gave him a city. One of the cities of the Philistines. Gave it to David to be his. Gave him Ziklag. And David took his army there. He had about 600 chosen men, you know. Under wives, under children, they followed him tight all the time. And David went out with the Philistines to battle. And once when he was away to battle, and I'm trying to save time, when he came back home to his own city, this is what happened. And we're at 1 Samuel chapter 30. 1 Samuel chapter 30. And it came to pass when David and his men were come to Ziklag on the third day, that the Amalekites had invaded the south, smitten Ziklag, and burned it with fire. The whole city was burned with fire. Oh, fury of the fire. And had taken the women captives that were therein. They slew not any, either great or small, but carried them away. And went on their way. Oh, what sorrow was left behind for the servants of the Lord. I want you to sort of see the fury of the fire and the sorrow of the servants. So David and his men came to the city, and behold, it was burned with fire, and their wives and their sons and their daughters were taken captives. Oh, what loss there was for these leaders. Then David and the people that were with him lifted up their voice and wept until they had no more power to weep. This was a day of weeping for warriors. Yeah, they were all weeping. Whole army weeping here. And David's two wives were taken captives. Ahinoam, the Jezreelitess, and Abigail, the wife of Nabal, the Carmelite. Now here's a mighty phrase. And David was greatly distressed. Let's get a hold of it. Mind you, if David was greatly distressed, it could come to you and I. And there's things happen in your home, and happen in your business, and happen in your body, and happen all around you, and you could be, you know, you could be greatly distressed. David was greatly distressed. This great man of God, this warrior, greatly distressed. For the people speak of stoning him, they blame him for it. You see, it wasn't only a day of loss for the leaders, the day of weeping for the warriors, the day of distress for David. It was a day of rebellion in the ranks. Oh, it's terrible when the ranks turn against you and you're on your own. Yes, David was greatly distressed, for the people speak of stoning him, because the soul of all the people was grieved, every man for his sons and for his daughters. But, here's a but. Oh, what a but it is. But David encouraged himself In the Lord is God. Oh, what an exercise. I think this is one of the most precious things in life, you know. This is David's inspiration in sorrow. You see, this is something you do for yourself, within yourself. Only you can do this. David encouraged himself in the Lord his God. You know, he took time, he just took time. And he turned away from the fury of the fire and from the loss and from the sorrow and the weeping. He turned his eyes upon the Lord, had a good look at the Lord, and remembered the things the Lord had said to him, began to take them all in again, began to realize that he was the king of Israel after all and would be on the throne. You know, he began to encourage himself in the Lord. Do you ever do this? Do you know about this? This is a mighty exercise. I can't do it for you. You can only do this within yourself, for yourself, by yourself. No use asking the pastor to do it. I've got to do it for me. He encouraged himself in the Lord. It's a mighty thing. And the more you practice it, it's like a weightlifter, the more you'll be able to do it and the more it'll be value to you. Yes, he's a great character. We mustn't miss this tonight. Let's go to 2 Samuel. And we're at 2 Samuel. And we're at chapter 11. Second book of Samuel. And we're at chapter 11. And I'm jumping the gun a little bit here. He is king now. And it came to pass after the year was expired, at the time when kings go forth to battle, that David sent Joab and his servants with him and all Israel, and they destroyed the children of Ammon and besieged Rabba, but David tarried still in Jerusalem. And it came to pass in an eventide that David arose from off his bed. He should have been at the battle. And if not at the battle, he should have been in bed. And walked upon the roof of the king's household. And from the roof he saw a woman washing herself. And the woman was very beautiful to look upon. And David was taken unawares here. And this is where the corruption of his soul came in. She was Bathsheba. And he sent for her, and he sinned with her, and because she was going to have a baby to him, then he sent for her husband, and they tried to involve him in this thing, but it wouldn't work, and he had to plan this man's death. He murdered him. Terrible indictment on David. Yes, it just stands there as a warning to all of us. Let him that standeth take heed, lest he fall. And when Bernadette was going to have the little baby to somebody some time ago, and some of these cruel creatures on the TV asked old Desley, "What do you think of Bernadette now?" I was never so proud of him as when he said, "Let him that hath no sin cast the first stone." That was the best day of his life. We would need to remember that. Just take heed. What a life it was, and what a school it was, what a time it was. Let's sing the 23rd Psalm. Let's sing two or three verses of it anyway. David penned this psalm, 562. Lord's my shepherd, I'll not want. Makes me down to lie in grass pastures green, and leadeth me to quiet waters by. And we sing the first verse, and the third verse, and the last verse. 562, please. Thank thee for the techniques, and we thank thee for the school and the scholars. We thank thee, Lord, that we're allowed to sit in the gallery and watch and learn. Oh God, we thank thee for these men that thou hast made, and we pray that we might learn the lessons and follow on to know the Lord. Part us now in thy fear and with thy blessing, for thy name's sake. Amen.